Blog Talk Radio.
Wacky Wednesday. I'm hoping you can hear me. This is Frederick, and this is Blackbird's Breakfast Club. I hope I'm coming across finally. Trying to get some feedback here from my producer. And it is Wacky Wednesday, December 16th, 2015. Hope everyone's having a good evening, morning, wherever you happen to be. And, okay, seeing from the chat room that we are coming through finally. Like to do a shout out to Microsoft for their fine products. Little background there. Apologize for the delay. The bird has landed. Hello, Nick Donnan. Yes, we had a few technical problems last week, and one of the things that we thought we would do this time was to make sure that we did a complete cold shutdown before we launched any of the software for the show, so we didn't have any background processes going. So at 7:30, I did a shutdown, and Microsoft 8.1 promptly informed me with their non-cooperative game theory model that they were going to do an update whether I liked it or not. And they promptly took 45 minutes to do an update, even though I have auto updates turned off. So thank you so much there, Bill Gates, for the added stress level on an already stressful week. But anyway, again, my apologies, but we know the show must go on. I thank everybody for staying with us here and coming back. Good to see a lot of people in the chat room. Had a really good response on last week's show. Must have been good because I spent the entire weekend really rebuilding my computer. Got hit with something good. But anyway, we have a completely rebuilt computer now. And yes, I know. Wow, I apologize. This was the off-the-shelf laptop I had to buy, and it has Windows 8.1 on it, and I have been having a wonderful learning curve on 8.1, to say the least. We are trying to move the Trading Post over to Linux systems that's been on the books, and after what just happened, I think that just got reprioritized for the Trading Post. So that said, what we're going to do now is go through the normal format for what I want for the show. And basically what we'll be doing between 8 and 8:30 each week is continuing to talk about the Pepper Plan Trading Post model. And then from 8:30 to 9, we want to have call-ins and questions from the chat room. And then from 9 to 10, I'm introducing what I called the Big Nine at Nine. And if you recall from last week's show, how we talked about what we want to do is come up with a communication model of the network design so that we're trying to get going in the same general direction without having to fall into any type of static system dynamics. We're trying to stay very dynamic and staying away from these static what I call them, you know, old school models, top down hierarchical models, and get into these peer to peer models. And so what we're going to be doing is having guests on and having basically their orientation to what I call the big nine at nine, which is the nine big questions that everybody needs to be asking themselves. And this is just a real loose-ended orientation to have the guests come on and just give them some structure, but a lot of freedom to talk about themselves and how they see the situation. And so we'll be talking about the big nine questions a little bit later on in the show. Remember how I described the difference between like an M16 rifle, how tight it was, and that precision engineering. And then the first time I picked up an AK-47, I immediately put it down because I thought it was broken because it had wiggle room. And so what we want with our model is a lot of wiggle room. And so so the big nine at nine is all about real general questions, but at the same time, we want to hopefully start seeing that there's a pattern going as we move into these dynamic peer-to-peer systems and away from these centralized master-slave static systems. So moving right along, as you remember, you know, last week's show, the point I was trying to make to everyone was whether you like it or not, you are at war. Okay, so let that sink in. Every person on this planet right now, third rock from the sun, every person on this planet right now is at war, whether they like it or not. They can be in denial about it, but the fact is we are all at war, and we're at war with an enemy, an adversary, that wants to see us either enslaved or dead. They are trying to force all of humanity into an intransigent, centralized, master-slave, static system, a seven-layer model that, in my opinion, is completely flawed and has no place in a modern world. So one of the things you have to realize once you realize that you are at war is when you ask yourself, who's going to do something about it? Well, it's like when you used to play tag as a kid and you're it. So I want everybody just kind of visualize somebody, I'm tagging you and saying, you're it. Okay, so the problems in your little part of this puzzle, you're it. Now, that's a lot of responsibility to put on somebody. That, you know, okay, everything that's going on in my immediate little environment, I'm responsible. I'm it. And so if something's going to be done, I've got to do something about it. So the next thing you should be asking yourself is, where am I going to get help? Because this is a big task. This is a big undertaking. You definitely need backup. So in this model, or the trading post model, what we want to do is develop a system whereby we're sharing resource both at the micro level and at the macro layer. So remember we talked about how, you know, the individual trading posts and outposts are like our local area networks, our lands. And then the networks between the trading posts are our WANs, our wide area networks. So the idea is to get resource and materials and bandwidth and knowledge, you know, meet the needs with the demands. You know, we got the need, we need the resource to match up. And so we are trying to get into this idea of cooperative system theory because our adversaries, our enemies, are using what is called non-cooperative game theory. And that is basically a fancy way of saying, we're going to make you do what you don't want to do. You know, we're going to force you to do what we want you to do. And this example of Windows was a perfect example of non-cooperative game theory. There was a time when Windows and other operating systems, you had the choice of being able to say, no, I don't want to do an upgrade right now. I just want to restart my machine. But when I saw the Windows 8.1 screen come up, even though I had auto updates turned off, it was all these forced hand options. I could either do a shutdown and an upgrade, or I could do a restart and an upgrade, but there was nothing there that says, you know, do the upgrade later, you know, what I want to do. So they're forcing this on me, just like there is no way to turn off the, you know, nonstop banners from Microsoft trying to trick me into upgrading to Windows 10, which I do not want to do because that is a horribly compromised system. It's, do not want to go to Windows 10. But yet every time I turn around, there's some other banner coming in trying to trick me into clicking the wrong thing, so it's going to automatically do this for me. So we're surrounded by this non-cooperative game theory model. And as we talked about last week, you know, this was basically a model developed by, in my working hypothesis, a guy in Israel by the name of Robert J. Ammon, who was a trader first class, in my opinion, because he was trained at MIT in the United States, and he basically took everything that he was, you know, taught at MIT and ran to Israel with it to figure out how to launch a war on the United States to trick us and force us into moving into fight Israel's greater Israel agenda. And this was, you know, the whole thing with 9/11 and the PNAC group and all of that, the Odin Yenin doctrine, which we talked about last week, and Richard Perle's clean break. And so basically Robert J. Ammon took John Nash's theories on non-cooperative game theory and corrupted them with this Talmud overlay. And that is what we're seeing all over the United States, is we're being forced along this path that we is not in our best interest. And we talked, yeah, coercive systems, Epic, you know, puts in the chat work. You know, these are coercive systems, and we've got to figure out ways to fight back on these non-cooperative game theories. You know, it's just like the make you an offer you can't refuse, you know, using these various, you know, carrot and stick paradigms. And so, you know, this, I thought that was just a good example. You know, Wacky Wednesday, we at the Trading Post, we always talk about Wacky Wednesday being the day when anything can happen, because, like here at Radio Werewolf, you know, we start on Mondays. Monday's the first day of the week, you know, and so, you know, and Sunday's the seventh day of the week. So, on Mondays, we come up with our plans. We get our crews together, resources, everything. People start the projects on Tuesday usually. And then by Wednesday, you're figuring out that the original plan is going to have to be modified because there was something that was not planned for that came up, or something got reprioritized. So we always talk about Wednesday being Wacky Wednesday because things happen. It's the anything can happen day. So that was a good example of the anything can happen paradigm, because, you know, best laid plans, you know, think, you know, if you start at 7:30, you know, you have plenty of time to shut your computer down and get ready for an 8 o'clock show, right? Well, that wasn't the case. So, so here, you know, just a good example of, again, cooperative systems, and, you know, what we want to do is create a system whereby the individual and the system are moving back in balance and harmony. We talked about how, you know, in the early version of the Articles of Confederacy of the colonial days and the Constitution, that was the goal was to create the system whereby the system and the individual were working in harmony together. Also, the Germans in the 30s, they came up with National Socialism. That was also a good example of that. It was a closed system that, you know, had everybody working together, both the individual and the system, for the greater good. And so what we're trying to do is come up with these kind of models. And you know, so what I have done is created, you know, what I call, you know, the trading post model, you know, based on my work with the Pepper Plan. And so what you are my peer-to-peer review group. So everybody listening, you know, you're it, and you're my newbies, and I'm trying to train you how to be my Zeta testers, which I call my freebies, to help me analyze this model and, you know, offer suggestions. And I have gotten so much support this week. It is amazing the amount of people that have just come out of the woodwork to help me solve all the problems that have popped up. A special shout out to Sigard at Radio Werewolf, Dion at Radio Werewolf, the Fetch over at ITEL. He has just been great mentoring me on things to help improve my show. So it's just amazing how much people have come in to help this. And that's what we're trying to do, is just come up with these cooperative systems where people are sharing resource. And then, you know, hopefully you're going to take enough interest in my model so that you're going to move from the spectator critic type role into the participant role. And it's like I said last week, you know, the trading post model is a hierarchical model. It is a meritorious model. And so once you move from the freebie thing of I want to get out of the audience and I want to get on stage and I want to do this because I think, you know, I can do a good job, or where I live needs this, we need help here, we've got a bad situation, then, you know, you might start wanting to set up your own outpost. And an outpost is a person who is working with an established trading post, because there's not one established yet. And so the next level after, you know, freebies is what we call the Peace Walkers, and their symbol is the crow. And you always hear me talking about going out on crow patrol. That's when I leave the trading post, go outside my 3-mile radius to help another trading post get started or help another outpost get started. Then once you get to the next level after a Peace Walker, you get into what's called the Peace Talker level, and that symbol is the wolf, and these are our crew chiefs. And, you know, you have your crew chiefs that are in charge of certain things. We're going to be breaking this down into a 9-layer model of expertise. We talked about things like gardening and farming. Talked about litigation. You know, how do you get somebody out of jail? You know, how do you act as an advocate going into court? You know, how do you deal with somebody that just had a family member die? So, yeah, that is our crew chief level. And then finally, when you really want to jump in full, you know, fledge and say, I really want to play here, that's when you become a peacemaker and start your own trading post. And that level is symbolized by the bear, and we call it the pro bear. And that's a little, always trying to keep this light and fun, you know, the professional bear, the pro bear, you're armed for bear, you can handle anything, and you can put together your crew to go out and take on anything that comes up. And so those three levels of the trading post, again, you got your peace walkers, peace talkers, peace makers, and the symbols again are your crows, your wolves, and your bears. Okay, so that's kind of how we have everything, you know, hierarchy lined up here. And real quickly, just want to go through how we're going to set up our IDs, and then we're going to start taking some questions from the chat room, and also give you the call number so you can be thinking about calling in, and that'll give me a experience here to see if I can connect a call. The guest call-in number is 929-477-3574. 929-477-3574. And give me a call, say hi, just check in, ping me, just see if we can make this work. And then, like I said, at 9 o'clock, we've got the Big 9 at 9 with our special guest, Dion Werewolf. He's going to come on and talk about how he came into the movement, how he came about doing Radio Werewolf, and a lot of other things as we talk about the Big Nine at Nine. Okay? So, Epic, not sure quite yet how to do a Skype call-in. So the question is, can we do a Skype call-in? I'm sure there probably is a way, but I don't know how to do it yet. So I'm putting out an RFK, request for knowledge, to those out, the crew out there. If you can train me in the next 20 minutes on how to do a Skype call-in and connect it into the show, that would be awesome. But up until then, I guess we'll just have to try to get the call-in number going. So that's kind of where we are, and I'd love to be able to do that because a lot of people would rather Skype than use a telephone. So now, last week in the show, we were talking about don't reinvent the wheel, okay? So one of the things when I was laying out how we're going to do our trading post IDs, I kind of went with the logical addressing that we use for the Internet. Everybody knows about IP addresses now. And also the physical addressing that the post office used in the United States, because one of the things in U.S. history that was revolutionary is the idea of the government printing its own money, was this idea of a secure communication system called the post office that had the strict rules about the confidence of the letter, that, you know, as long as that letter was in the postal service's hands, it was non-compromised. Now, you know, our adversary has worked round the clock since 1776 to get around that various ways. But, you know, that was just revolutionary that, you know, they took the First Amendment very, very seriously. And so when they developed the Postal Service, that got put into it. And so what we used from the Postal Service was the development of the zip code system. So, right now, I'm coming to you from Trading Post NC605. So what we do there is basically take the last three digits of the local zip code. So you have a Trading Post number based on the zip code where it's physically located, and then the county, and then the state, and then the country, and then the continent you're on. Okay? Because remember, we're trying to set this up globally because this is a global situation. So I'm going to be using, you know, U.S. zip codes, and so we're going to have to come up with other countries to use their postal codes. But that's how you identify your physical nodes in this logical network. So remember, we're trying to set up local area networks and wide area networks. So, for example, this trading post where I'm broadcasting from tonight is NC605 because I'm coming from Boone, North Carolina, okay? And so my trading post down in Wilkes County is NC659. So it's NC659. So when I get the web page up, I'll have all this information there. Okay. And so that's kind of giving you an idea of how to set up your identity as a physical location and a logical location. All right. Now, so let's go out to take some questions from the chat room here. Somebody asked me a good question. And there's silence in the chat room and there's silence on the phone lines. Okay. Again, the call-in number is 929-477-3574. And if anybody wants to call, we can test that out. Okay. Okay. Jan made a comment, not really a question, but that the French court did today rule that Native French do not and have never existed. So that's a good example of the idea of this, you know, European genocide of all indigenous cultures being wiped out. That's part of the fourth generation warfare that's going on. It's to destroy all existing cultures so that the individual no longer has an identity and that makes them more likely to come over to the quote-unquote New World Order. You take their leadership away from them, and people have to have leadership. So if you take the good leadership away, then they're only left with bad leadership. Okay. Nick Donnan asks in the chat room, how long did it take to set up my trading post? This is actually the third physical trading post. The first one was set up in Chatham County, and that's where I ran for North Carolina House in 2002. I had my house and my farm there, and it had a different bend on it then. It was more about setting up cooperative food, like farmers markets, organic food, humane farming practices, getting away from GMO things. So we had a lot more pre-9/11 take. And then my second one was down in Wilmington, and that was from 2004 to about 2007. And then I relocated back up here to the mountains of North Carolina. And so this is the third trading post. And then, like I said, the one I have on my land down in Wilkes County. So I'm working on these two trading posts right now. Okay, so hopefully that answered that question. But the way I set this up, you know, is you can play at any level. And that was the when we talked last week about the OSI seven-layer reference model. The beauty of it was there was no fast, hard rules about having to follow everything to the T, which was very, very different than what the engineers were used to with the IEEE standards, AT&T standards, where basically you had to be in full compliance or you would be fined, punished, or otherwise by some governing body above you. And with the OSI 7-11 reference model, that was all removed. It was basically a buffet style where you could kind of pick and choose how much you wanted to play. And so with the trading post model, you know, you're welcome to use any of all this material that you want and get as active or stay the spectator that you want. And we talk about at any time, you are free to throw down your bucket and stop playing and say, I quit. You're also free to come back and pick up your bucket at any time and start playing again. And some people do that. We, you know, like with everything, personal interaction, you know, you're going to get cases of butt hurt. And so I'll have people that, you know, will step away for a while and then they'll come back and then all's forgiven. And it's not like a corporate model where you fire somebody and they're banished forever and, you know, they're put on a watch list at security where they can't come back. So, you know, there's a lot of dynamic coming and going at the trading post. So, okay. Jan asks, BB, I think you used to post at Dawson's site. And that is true. Yes, Ryan Dawson, a little background there was before I really went public, I was trying to find as many people as I could that were kind of on the same page, and I was feeding them data anonymously, you know, about the NSA model or the NSA spying, et cetera. And Ryan Dawson was one of those people, and then I stopped posting anonymously there and started posting as BB9 there. And I did that for quite a while. Okay, and then Blau asked, what type of products do you trade? Okay. The trading post model, we say, is goods, services, and solutions. Okay, for all creatures, great and small. So the goods that we have are like our produce that we grow in the garden, our honey. I will rebuild like computer systems or telephone network systems for businesses that a lot of family-owned businesses, especially small mom-and-pop businesses, are having a horrible time right now. And so I try to keep them going. And a lot of them have very outdated equipment, which kind of works for me because I'm much more comfortable, since I've been out of it for so long, with the gear that I was used to working with versus a lot of the new stuff. So it works for me sometimes to go in and find these, you know, old phone systems, like old Sprint systems and stuff like that, that I'm very familiar with, and I can fix them. And there's a great place like in Tennessee that specializes in refurbished telecommunications gear. And so I can go into like a 20 phone business and get them back up and working for very little money, and, you know, sell them computers that I've refurbished here, et cetera. And services we offer, do a lot of elder care, a lot of demand for elder care in this region. We also do a lot with like Alzheimer's and dementia patients, providing them with services, do a lot of advocacy work, getting people that, you know, getting in trouble. There are so many laws in North Carolina, especially when it comes to domestic issues, things like child support. And, you know, once somebody, you know, the basic thing here is kids are kids. They're going to go out and get in trouble. And next thing you know, there's a baby in the mix. And they weren't trying to have a baby. They were just trying to have recreational sex. But the baby's there. And they have two people that hate each other and blaming each other for ruining each other's lives and demanding money from each other. And the courts are skewed here to really feed into that. So once a person has been, you know, put on the list of you have to pay child services, blah, 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 and the person's sitting there going, I have no work, you know, I can't find a job, because unemployment in North Carolina is skyrocketing. And so a lot of these young people just don't have the money and resources. So next thing you know, the cops are showing up and dragging them to jail because they don't have any money to pay their child support. And so we'll go in and try to, you know, first get the, you know, like we said last week, stabilize, orient, navigate. First thing we do is we stabilize the situation. We get a call in the middle of the night from somebody that says, such and such is in jail. You know, so the first thing is we have to go get them out of jail. So it usually ends up in, you know, finding a Bell's Bondsman if I can, or if we don't have the resources to pay for the bond, we'll get a Bell's Bondsman and get them out, and then, you know, find out what the situation is and go in and work with social services and try to get an equitable settlement to calm the situation down. So, like I said, basically every trading post is going to be unique based on the skill sets of the individuals involved. And as you learn more about it, you're going to learn about the 9 key points of every trading post. And it's basically the 9 facets, everything from your water up through, you know, your food, up through your court situations, law enforcement, trade, banking, economics. So you're going to have people that have various expertise. So one trading post may just be working a lot with organic produce and food distribution. Other people are going to be working on things like court advocacy and politics at the macro level. Other people are going to be working in security systems, computer stuff. It's just a very, you know, freestyle, general network of people working together with hopefully a common objective of trying to get away from this, our adversary's new world order, and get towards a, you know, distributed peer-to-peer system where the individual and the system are working in harmony with each other. Oh, that's Nick Donnan in the chat room makes the comment, sounds like Golden Dawn. Great stuff, BB Don. And it's interesting that, you know, the Golden Dawn, I don't know if you're talking about the Greek political movement or the Aleister Crowley's Golden Dawn. But so if you could clarify that a little bit, but both are there's great stuff with both of those. There's a lot of stuff with Golden Dawn. Okay, I'm trying to read Sigard's comment here. Okay, the Greeks, yes, the Greek model. They are very growing. It says, no, not Crowley's building on it. Okay. So, yeah, the Greek model is very, very, they get a lot of bad press in the Zio media, but they're doing some incredible things in Greece right now. And in Greece, one of the things about our adversary is it's never forgive, never forget, and never enough. If you have ever got on the hit list, you know, of the tribe, they have this mentality of not only going after you, but your children and your children's 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 children. So, you know, Greeks, you know, have always been a thorn in the side of the Jewish system. And so I think it's no accident that Greece was one of the first countries to really get hit by the economic collapse post 9/11. They have, you know, really destroyed Greece. And Detroit is another example. I still say that Detroit is paying for the sins of Henry Ford's quote-unquote anti-Semitism, because they have taken Detroit down. Detroit is so depressing. So Sigard says, that makes two classes by social design, the multicut submissive class and the master dominant elite chosen class. So then you have new emerging independent freelance third class network that deprograms and recruits from the dominant submissive class for an expanding third class, thus making foundations for real trading posts, aka community internet router. Yeah, that's wow. Sigard, we've been having such good conversations over in the chat room at Radio Werewolf, and he always makes me think about things I hadn't thought about, and always think about things a different way after I chat with him for a while. But I think the key thing there is that our adversaries want to destroy the middle class, because Zionism, like communism, Talmudic Judaism, it is a two-tiered level system. There is the master class and the subclass. And I always say communism was just Zionism in a red dress. And so there is no room for a middle class in Talmudic Noahide law. There is no middle class in the Zionist New World Order. It is a two-tiered system, one set of laws for the elite up here, the Chosenites, and then another set of laws for everybody else, the slave class. And don't always remember that just because somebody has money and can buy things, they're just a pampered slave. They just have privileges. They do not have rights. There are no rights for the subclass in Talmudic Noahide law, only privileges that can be withheld or given at the whim of the master. KD makes the point that there were record levels in Detroit water today, lead levels in Detroit water tap supply today. That doesn't surprise me. So we're coming up on 9 o'clock. Anyone else have any quick questions about the model at this point? Okay, so if not, then we're going to wait for our guest, Dion Werewolf, to come on. And like I said, what we're going to do is line up our guests for the 9 to 10 slot, and we have what we call the Big 9 at 9. And basically, the Big 9 questions is, question one, who are you? Sounds simple. And that's the, you know, what I like about these questions is you can take them very, very simplistic, or you can get very elaborate with them. So the first question is, who are you? Second question, where are you? Third question, what are you? Fourth question, when are you? Fifth question, why are you? Sixth question, which way are you going? Seventh question, how will you go? Eighth question, who will go with you? And the ninth question, and I want to preface this ninth question with a little background, I am in no way afraid to use the big J word. I used to be, when I first was developing this model, I would use the word meanie, all capital letters, and you'll also hear me talk about people wearing their meanie beanies with their little Yamaha hats. I always call those meanie beanies. But I started over in groups like David Swanson's After Downing Street site, I used to post over at AJ site. I used to post at Veterans Now. I used to post over at Boiled Frogs. And so with that real liberal environment, you could not use the J word. You know, you could barely use Zionism. I used to get in trouble all the time for just talking about the political movement of Zionism. You know, but I was immediately called a hater and an anti-Semite just for saying Zionism. So there was no way you could use the J word in that environment. So I came up with the idea of saying meanie. And so one of the things you have to get into as we move from the keyboard out into our communities is we have to be aware of our friends, neighbors, cognitive dissonance, that they've been programmed by very effective tools, and they are so full of the Holocaust, 9/11, you know, the wrong stories. So if we try to connect the dots for them, they're just going to get upset and afraid of us. And if you say the J word, they're going to run fleeing from you. So as we move out, one of the jokes about this, and I always try to keep the Trading Post model very, very light, very, you know, we want to keep our energy levels up in the higher circuits. You know, fear and anger, when you get down there, you know, you're getting out of spatial logic mode, down into linear logic mode, down into static logic mode. And so people pick up on that, and it repels them. But if you stay up in those high circuits, then people will be drawn to you, and you just present them with the data and let them connect the dots, and you just baby spoon feed them at their level of you know, what their rate of change is. And so that is how I've been managing to do this, and it's a very tiring process, but it does work. And so the ninth question is, what do you do in case of a meanie attack? And one of the things we're going to be monitoring is, as we look at this around the world, like I was saying last week, I'm kind of buffered up here in North Carolina mountains. But, you know, I had to go into a situation in D.C. a couple of weeks ago where it was totally bad situation. You know, somebody got killed in their home. I had to go in and clean up a murder scene. When you hear people like Karen Smith talk about what's going on in South Africa, you know, people are living in tent cities. Same thing. We got millions of people in the U.S. right now living in tent cities. So, you know, so it's, you're going to be dealing with some bad situations. And, you know, how do we defend against, you know, meanie attacks and however that might come? Is it going to be, you know, rape gangs of so-called war refugees? You know, is it going to be corrupt law enforcement? Is it going to be any number of things? You know, they're going to be using the legal systems against us. You know, so we're going to have to be coming up with defense mechanisms for all these different levels of meanie attacks against us. So, So the ninth question is, what do you do in case of a meanie attack? So I just think it's going to be interesting, hopefully, for our guests to come on and take these very general questions, very simple general questions, and talk about them. You know, so I'm very honored to have, you know, our first guest tonight, Mr. Dion Werewolf. And see if we can't get him hooked up here. We're in the Skype right now. Trying to get this set up. You have to excuse me. I'm a newbie at this level of this interface here. So. And are you there?
Yes, sir.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, our guest for this evening, Mr. Dion Werewolf. So nice to have you with us tonight.
Well, thanks for inviting me on.
And again, I apologize for being late to work today. Had a little problem with the windows on a wacky Wednesday. So
yeah, that happens when you're doing Windows. It likes to update periodically for like no reason at all.
Yeah, like I said, I specifically, after I did the rebuild this weekend, I specifically said, yeah, no auto update. Turn that off everywhere I could find it. And it still did it to me. So I just found that very comical that, you know, of all the times to decide to do it, it was right before I go on the air. It's like, okay, no stress level there.
Right. So. You sit there and watch it. It seems like forever, but it's only been like 5 minutes.
Yeah, and it's just said they got 20% complete, 21% complete. It's like they're going to hate me on the show. You know, they're going to go, where is he? Where is he? He bailed on the show. So, but for next week, I'm going to have a backup system in place. I've already got the parts together. I just need to put them together. But I will have a backup computer before next week's show. So for our... you know, listeners who aren't familiar with it, I know a bunch of my crews over here from all over the place visiting. And then we have the normal Radio Werewolf crew that I'm getting to know. It's been a great couple of weeks listening to everyone else's show and kind of getting a take on what the other shows are about and what people are focusing on in the different shows and learning some of the people's names. And so I've definitely been enjoying that. So let's just start out with question one. Who are you?
Dion. So you sent me these questions earlier, and I wasn't sure there's supposed to be some big analytical thing to it, or because they seem pretty simplistic. It's like, who are you? I'm Dion.
Right.
Because if you go down the list, then the other questions get more kind of specific, but... So if you give a whole big analytical speech about who I am, because then like one of the next ones is, what are you? Which is more in depth than who are you?
Okay. This is an experiment. We always have to remember this is an experiment. Y'all are my zeta testers. And if it blows up, we just have to go, okay, we learn from that and move on. Revise and revamp and renew.
It's so, like a trick question.
Right, but it's just, you know, so, you know, who are you? Well, I'm Dion. Enough said. So, and where are you?
Oh, wait, hold on a second. I think people are having, it says dead air, which I'm not sure why. I got a check. It says I'm connected.
I'm hearing you.
Wait, are they hearing? They should be able to hear both of us. I don't know. We'll just keep going.
Okay. Because I can hear you. I'm on a.
Okay. Apparently they can hear you, but they can't hear me.
Okay. So what should I do? Okay. I hear Dion, no audio.
Okay. Let me try this then. Because I thought this might. Usually when I do it myself, I have it on here, this device,
mm-hmm.
But I turned it off. Oh, yeah. I turned it off because since we're going through Skype, I figured they could hear it that way, but apparently not. So let me change this.
We're working on the problem. Bear with us just a second. This is a learning curve experiment.
Okay, now they should be able to hear me.
Okay, keep talking, Dion. So.
All right. Yeah, because usually when I do it myself, I have it on listen to this device, which is kind of annoying because I get the latency in my headset. But I figured since I was calling in the Blog Talk, they'd be able to hear it. But then now I think about it, it doesn't work that way.
Okay. Well, can you call on the
number? No, it's fine. No, it's fine now because I just had to switch my microphone over.
Okay. Boy Howdy saying, there you go. Rebel Wolf saying, there you go. All right. So, well, let's start over.
No, I'm not going to go back on mute.
Okay. So, I guess we'll just start over real quick with question one. Our guest tonight is Mr. Dion Werewolf. And question one is, who are you? Answer is Dion. And then question two, where are you?
Wisconsin.
Okay. Okay. Question three, what are you?
That's kind of a trick question, I guess. It depends on my mood. It depends on the day. But I would say I'm a white nationalist. But I've been rethinking that lately because that term doesn't really mean anything. And I don't know. I'm a white guy.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I had to realize one day that, I'm a white guy and there is a war against me, whether I like it or not. And having to just really come to grips with that there is a movement in play for white genocide. And you can't deny that. So what do we do with that information? Once you have that knowledge, it's not going to go away. So what do we do to say there is a war against people like me? Okay. So question four, when are you?
Part of me is here now and part of me is in the future because the vast majority of what I do is for the future. It's not for right here, right now, but we have to use right here, right now to get where we're going in the future. We have to start here today to get to tomorrow.
Right, because I totally agree, because one of the first things in my newbie presentation of the Pepper Plan is to say, you are here. And there's a little X there. You are here. And the follow-up to that is, you've got a right to be here. To be, by the definition, axiomatic definition that you're here, you have a right to be here. You are in the present. So the way I look at it is, we're here in the present and we're looking towards the future, where we're going, and we're looking towards the past to see how did we get to this point in time and what can I learn from the past to help me get to the future. And what I see as one of the biggest problems there is so much about what we have been taught about the past is bad data. So we're operating from a bad data set of where we came from. So I think part of the Pepper Plan is, really looking back at the past more accurately. And that's why I'm so interested in so many of the revisionists out there, because I'm having to wrestle with so much of my own cognitive dissonance on things I had accepted as if true. But now I'm having to say that's been a lie, that was a lie, that was a lie, that was a lie. And so I'm kind of in the same place. So, we are here in the present. We look into the future. We got to learn from the past, but accurately learn from the past. Okay, so
And a lot of times, what was it?
Go ahead.
Oh, and a lot of times people say, in 2050, whatever, you won't be here, so why do you care? And it's a lot bigger than me or you or any of us specifically. It's a much wider view.
I totally agree with that because I have so many nieces and nephews out there. And it's like, I may not be here, but they will be. What kind of now am I going to be leaving behind for them if I don't help try to stop what's happening? Now, and I think that's one of the holes that our adversary falls in when they're recruiting their, you know, Shabbat goys, if you will, their useful idiots, is these people have this nihilistic view of, you know, they don't care about anybody else. They're just trying to indulge all of their wants and desires and, you know, whatever they're into to the nth degree. And they have these holes in their souls where they're just, you know, more and more and more of this, that, and the other. And our adversary, you know, if you've got the money or if they need you, they will provide you with anything you want, be it drugs, be it women, you know, children, sex slaves, whatever. They will get you what you want if you will do their bidding. And I think so many people have fallen into that trap that, you know, they don't care about anybody else or the future. They're just looking after themselves for their little finite amount of time. And I think that is such a selfish, flawed, destructive model for both the individual and for society.
Right. Yeah, because we got this corporatist culture right now that all that really matters anymore is just buying more stuff and getting the best toys, the biggest toys. It doesn't matter anything about the future because, oh, you could just take a loan out for if you want something bigger and better.
Mm-hmm. Right. I like what Sygard in the chat room just said, that we're operating on corrupted data with lots of bad sectors and imminent failure. Time to reformat. And I like that.
Right.
Makes so much sense, you know. Okay. Oh, and a master slave IOU. Yeah, it's just that,
right.
You know, those pampered slaves that are, you know, in debt and just, you know, are slaves, but, you know, they have everything they want. They're pampered slaves, but they're still a slave. And I always, you know, tell people about the idea of a monkey trap. I don't know if you're familiar with what a monkey trap is, but you basically take a gourd and you put a small hole in it and then you tie it to a tree and you put the bait inside the gourd. And the monkey comes under and puts his hand in to get the bait and then makes a fist around it. But when he does that, then the hand won't come out of the gourd. And rather than let it go and escape, he'll just sit there and hold on to it. And then they come over and knock the monkey on the head then and have him for dinner. You know,
right.
But the monkey won't let go of that bait. And I think, you know, the credit card is the monkey trap. You know, people, you know, just have that death grip on that credit card and all that stuff, and they won't let go of it, even though it means that they're going to eventually pay the ultimate price. Yeah, Rebel says monkey trap booze and a naked blonde. Exactly. You know, they just, you know, they'll sell out the nation for that. You know, Okay, so question six, you know, which way are you going?
I know where I'd like to go. Where we're actually going to go, that's a different story altogether. We all can't see into the future. We know where we'd like to be, like where we'd like to go. And I don't know. That's kind of a hard one to answer, I guess.
Yeah, you know, these questions, you know, when I was coming up with them several years ago, they seemed so deceptively simple. And then it's just, they just kind of keep looping through and you think of more and more things. And that's what I kind of want to do with this part of the show is, you know, let's really look at these questions. They seem simple, but, you know, we need to be asking these questions as we're trying to orient ourselves and get this movement going in a kind of a more general, organized direction and focus without having to be tight about it, if you will. Does that make sense? You know, we don't want these rigid structures, because I think that's going to turn so many people off if you try to recruit people for service. You know,
right.
We don't want that. We're not trying to set up a cult system or, you know, some paramilitary group, you know, whatever. But, you know, we're trying to get this system of organization. And one of the things I was thinking about when I was developing it was, if you've ever been in a swarm of bees when they're swarming, And it's amazing because you're standing there and there are like 10,000 bees swirling around you. And it seems totally random, but they're definitely making a movement and they're not running into each other. And that's the amazing thing. And then you go and you see these flocks of birds where there are just hundreds of birds taking off at the same time, going in a general direction, but they're doing these wonderful fractal type patterns. But it's a unified direction, and they're not bumping into each other. Nobody's crashing and burning. And you're like, how can they do that? That is amazing. You know, because I'm sitting there trying to herd cats a lot of times. And I don't know if you know that, for, you know, the expression herding cats.
Right.
And so trying to get, you know, humans to have that kind of graceful movement of we're going in this direction, but nobody's, you know, it's not a master slave leader follower thing. It's a peer to peer movement. And so that's, you know, a lot of what I'm trying to do. Getting back to that, you know, which way are you going question. How did you come up with Radio Werewolf? And, you know, what's your backstory? Because I know you, I found out you've been in broadcasting for a while now, right?
Yeah, about 6 or 7 months. It hasn't been that long. The whole idea about Radio Werewolf, actually, I kind of stole it. At the end of World War II, there was an operation by the German military called the Operation Werewolf, which was supposed to be a guerrilla force that kept fighting after the war ended.
Right, I'm familiar with that.
Right, and then they had a propaganda arm called Radio Werewolf.
Now that I did not know. I knew about the werewolf movement in Germany, but I did not know that the it was called Radio Werewolf. Okay.
Yeah, they had a propaganda arm. It was called Radio Werewolf, and I changed the name or the spelling of werewolf, so it's more like the weremock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really liked what you did with that. I thought that was very unique.
You know, a lot of people like it, and some people hate it. They're like, they don't even understand why it's spelt it that way. So I think, yeah, the people who hate it are the ones that don't understand why it's spelt it that way.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of direction, you know, when you said, I want to do this, you know, what kind of were some of your short-term and long-term goals for the site?
Well, initially, the site was made just to archive all my material. But then I left where I was before, and I don't really get into that because I don't want to get into this high school drama crap.
Huh?
Basically, whatever they were doing over there, I didn't agree with, so I decided to leave. So then we, I say we, but... we decided to start our own network, and the whole premise of actually, for me personally, for starting the network is to have something that was more beneficial to our people than, you know, trying to get the max amount of listeners or money or any of that garbage. We're not here to be rock stars or be famous or whatever the hell else other people are out there trying to do, which it seems like that's a lot of what they're trying to do. It's like they're trying to be, you know, figureheads and stuff without actually being leaders of anything. They just have their own little cliques here and there. But I wanted a more positive direction for our people to go in than just the same old that was out there.
Well, I think you've done a great job with what I've seen. Like I said, I'm learning the shows and the people behind the shows and, you know, working in the chat room and just learning the crew there. And just some very talented people and lots of good resource. Like I said, I have gotten so much help the last couple of weeks with all kinds of different things that just people just stepping forward and say, well, here, do this, 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 and this. And I'm like, wow, that worked. That's great. rather than me having to go through the learning curve of that. So you have definitely drawn some really good people to you. And Sygard, kind of what I was thinking when you were talking about the different groups out there and the people more about promoting themselves than being real leadership. He calls it a cult of personality.
Right.
And, you know, I kind of have seen that too, and especially the various factions of the 9/11 truth movement. I think we have a lot of that going on. And I guess that was one of the things I was trying so hard not to do when I was coming out for 9/11 truth and the NSA spying, was the last thing I wanted to be seen as is yet another hack trying to sell a book.
Right.
You know, I did not want to be a celebrity. I'm not out there trying to make money. And like I say, my stuff is always shareware. You're not going to hear me asking for a dollar. I make my money other places. So I get... you know, when I see somebody, you know, just is constantly, you know, hitting you up for money for this, that, and the other, and it's just, it kind of puts you off after a while. I know, you know, we have to support our sites because, you know, it costs money for bandwidth. You know, these sites, you got to pay rent. You know, you got to pay for the bandwidth. You know, it just seems like so, you know, a lot of people are all about the shekels. And, KD's pointing out, you know, some of the people, you know, it's these cults of personality, and, you know, they're right and everyone else is idiots, you know, so it's just this, you know, my way or the highway. And that, to me, that, you know, reduces to the same master slave type systems that I see that we're trying to get away from. You know, it's just, you kind of sometimes wonder, it's like, well, okay, what would happen if we gave that individual absolute power? Would we be in better shape now than we are? I always like the adage of, you know, power tends to corrupt and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So a lot of the people in the movement, you know, they'll complain about various other people. And it's just this draconian, you know, I'm right and they're wrong. And, you know, they're just, there's no room for discussion in there. And I've always been kind of a truth buffet kind of guy where, right. You know, I see that, well, I agree with 80% of what that guy says. And I agree with about 90% of what that guy says. And, you know, that guy over there, about 30% of what he says, you know, kind of got my eye on him, you know, her. But so I'm not really into this absolutism in the movement. So that's one of the things that's refreshing about your site and the shows, is there seems to be a lot of wiggle room in there. There's a lot of spectrum of opinions. You know, people, you know, have, there's not so much opinions. They have their facts and they can back it up. So there's these different worldviews out there and they're not all the same, but yet they're very based in fact from what I'm seeing so far. So that's one of the things I've, you know, like I said, I've really enjoyed, you know, working with your crew here on the site, and I'm hoping I'm going to be able to contribute something to it. So,
that's the one thing that was kind of bothering me too. Like, a lot of people have this all or nothing attitude. Like, you got to believe 100% of what I believe in, or you're a shill, or you're a Jew, or you're a fed, or whatever the hell it is, or you're just an idiot. And that always got on my nerves.
Right. And yeah, I get that a lot. I had several trolls dogging me not too long ago, especially over at Mamie's. And, I mean, I couldn't do anything right, you know. I was just like, you know, I was the Antichrist at one point. I mean, I was like, that BB9 was standing for 666, and I was the Antichrist, and I was this NSA covert operative, and this, that, and the other. And you're sitting there going, well, how do you prove that you're not? And,
right.
You know, at one point I think she had me kind of worried, you know, it's like, oh my God, maybe I am, you know? So that was one of the things I started coming up with my weekly, playlist of, I call it my, Mega Meta Blues series. And on every Wacky Wednesday, I release one, and it's basically, synchronicities of things that have popped up in the week of, you know, this is me going through my daily routine, and these are things that pop up, and I string those together, and it just kind of makes this stream of consciousness synchronicity kind of flow to it. And so I release those every week to just say, okay, this is me at the micro level, personal level, up to the macro level of what I'm seeing. And hopefully, you know, you can appreciate what, even if you don't like the material itself, you can see what I'm trying to do. But just to show that I'm a human being that, am, you know, I'm doing this and I'm on the front lines here, and this is what my days are like. This is, you know, kind of my reality. And so I always post those every Wednesday, and they're really actually doing kind of good. People are really kind of getting into them. And I just, you know, I guess that's just kind of my way of trying to show that, you know, I'm real, not some, you know, Pentagon general generated cybot or something. You know, this
right.
is a real white guy from North Carolina that's in, you know, the front lines, and, you know, this is how I'm seeing the situation, and I'm willing to share what I've got with you or what I've seen with you, and, you know, let's get to come together on this.
So. Yeah, that's the other thing, is that people don't want to work together. Like I said before, they all got their little cliques, their cult of personalities, and they don't want to work together at all.
Right, and that's one of the things I think we've got to get away from is, you know, we've got to get away from those I'm not going to do anything unless I'm forced to do it mentality and get into a more cooperative model. And, you know, we've got to come together, and that's why I created the Pepper Plan as such a general model, like the OSI 7-layer reference model, because – like I said in the first show, I don't have the answers, but I can give us a communication model so that we can start asking the same questions, and then we can come up with the answers together. And the answers here may work here, here, and here, but we're going to need a different set of answers for over there because it's, you know, a different situation. So that's why I designed this model the way I did, rather than somebody, you know, trying to come down with their own version of the Ten Commandments and getting a cult following. You know, it's like, I don't have the answers. If I did, I'd give them to you. But that's not how it works. And I just took what I learned when we were designing and building the internet and converging these very different phone systems and data systems together and saying, okay, this is kind of where we are. We've got this group of people over here that thinks they're the masters of the planet that want to enslave us or kill us, and then we've got these people over here that need to learn how to be cooperative, or they're going to
right.
be killed and enslaved, because we are at war with these two systems. And so I'm hoping that, you know, we're going to continue to get momentum, and our work here is going to contribute to the movement. So with that said, you know, the next question, how will you go? Okay, question 7, how will you go?
Kicking and screaming.
Good answer. I love that. Kicking and screaming. one of the things that popped into my reality today was somebody played, I can't even remember where I was just driving down the hill to check the mail, and flipped on the local radio station, and they were playing the old Clash song, Guns of Brixton, and it was just right at the point where it says, when they kick at your front door, how are you going to go? With the hands on your head or on the trigger of your gun or however the line goes? And
right.
I was just like, yeah, you know, how are you going to go? You know, are you going to go peacefully into that dark night, you know, or are you going to go kicking and screaming? And so, you know, I always tell people that I will quit fighting Zionism when they pry my cold, dead fingers off my keyboard.
Exactly. You know, pretty much my whole life has been revolved around, I don't know, kind of fighting the establishment, whatever that was at the time. And, you know, it's evolved through the years, but yeah, I've always been kind of a rebel in kind of a contrarian, but yeah, I'll keep fighting to the day I die.
Yeah, and I always go back to the old saying, you know, it's a good day to die. And the other adage is, what is it, a coward dies 1,000 deaths, but a brave man dies but once.
Right.
And I would rather be, you know, going down, fighting for what I believe in, rather than, you know, being a slave to these people that I don't care for very much, and I don't like what they're doing, and I don't care how much money, gold, and perks are involved. I'm not going to support their system. I'm going to do everything in my power to fight it, and that may put me on the list, but so be it. You know, you got to go sometime, right?
Right. Yeah, and I think sometimes, I always knew there was something wrong with the system. I just didn't actually know what it was. And I think sometimes, like with people like us, I think we're more born that way than actually evolve that way. I think there's something in people's psychological makeup that, you know, we can see the world the way it really is. Kind of like the, what's that movie? Oh, They Live.
I love
we
that
can see
film.
It easier.
That's the required viewing for everyone in the movement.
Right.
And another one is Invasion of the Body Snatchers, especially the original black and white version, where I just see that, you know, so many people are in this sleep state with their cognitive dissonance, and you know, they can't accept anything but the official version of 9/11, and they, you know, have no problem with being groped at the airport by TSA, and you know, because they're keeping us safe, and just, you know, what is it, the old saying, they've drank the Kool-Aid. And
right.
You have this other group of people that are waking up, and or, you know, even more awake than I am, that, you know, it's like, you know, do you see it? It's kind of like a magician. You know, you either fall for the trick or you see through the trick. And so with me, you know, my big awakening, like I said, you know, 9/11 changed everything. I really had to, you know, confront my own cognitive dissonance, you know, after 9/11 and where those breadcrumbs led. And it led to some very hard places for me to accept. And it's like, yeah, that's the reality. And we just have to face it. And I've, you know, once you wake up, you can't go back.
Right. Yeah, I think 9/11 woke up a lot of people. Like, personally for me, I'm a machinist, so I've worked with steel for 20 years. I know you're not going to melt it with some fire.
Right, but what's so sad there is I know so many civil engineers and construction engineers, people that actually have welding firms and metal fabrication firms, that when I start talking about 9/11 truth, they say, you're crazy. And I'm like, you know more about this than I do. I only had to take the basic classes in engineering school. You know, like I was talking about, you know, in engineering school, everybody has to take the basic physics and the basic statics and dynamics, the basic thermodynamics and basic chemistry. And I'm like, you actually pursued, you know, how to work with metals. If anybody should understand this, it should be you. Why
right.
am I, you know, you're looking at me like I'm an idiot here, and you should be the first one to say that's physically impossible. And so, you know, you as somebody who works with metal, yeah, you saw that, you know, that can't happen that way. That's physically impossible.
Right.
Go ahead.
What was that? No, especially with, you know, I don't know how thick I-beams are in a skyscraper, but I'm pretty sure they're a couple inches thick. You know, some flames from a jet fuel isn't going to do anything to it.
Right. And, you know, Katie's talking in the chat room, you know, Building 7. Building 7 was not hit by a plane, came down in free fall speed, and those girders were melted. They were, you know, that thermite ripped through them like melted butter. And people still say, well, the office fires did that, and this said so, and Popular Mechanics said so. And I'm like, yeah, the thing about Popular Mechanics, yeah, that was, you know, Benjamin Chertoff, and he's sort of like cousins with Michael Chertoff, and Michael Chertoff's sort of like the guy who got all the Israelis back to Israel, and he's also the guy that kind of penned the Patriot Act. He's also kind of the guy that blocked the investigation. You know, so why are you listening to Popular Mechanics? And they say, well, you know, the NIST study and, you know, this study. And I'm like, that's marketing. That's, you know, those things were cut, like the 9/11 Commission. It's like, you know, Philip Zelikow, he was brought in for damage control. And, you know, that's one of the things you have to realize with any investigation. An investigation is called to do one of two things, either to find out what happened or to make sure that nobody finds out what really happened. You know, that's the way investigations work. And so they're either there to cover it up or to investigate it. And the 9/11 Commission, you know, that was put together just, you know, the Bush and Cheney's administration did not want that to begin with, but there was so much political pressure from the widows of all the 9/11 victims that it was political suicide not to do something. And so they just did this show thing, and Zelikow had it written before anything even happened. And what's amazing about the 9/11 Commission report is Building 7's not even mentioned in it.
Right.
You know, it's like, how can you not even mention Building 7 in this, you know, 300 pages or whatever? You know, Katie's talking about, you know, that Israel's not mentioned, and
you want to pick up that other call?
Okay, we got a call coming in. Let's see here. From 315. Are you there?
Good evening. Good evening.
Good evening. Who are we talking with?
This is Nick.
Well, hello, Mr. Nick. So good to have you on the
show. It's a pleasure.
And it actually worked.
To talk to you, sir. Yeah.
So we have tested that. We have success.
Good. Good. It's a pleasure to talk to you, sir. You've shared so much good stuff over the years, and a great discussion you guys are having. I can't remember exactly why I'm calling in now, but I just think this trading post notion is really, really important, and it's the kind of thinking we need right now. We got so many people underemployed, unemployed. And this whole Golden Dawn concept where you build political support through community service. You demonstrate to people that you're on their side and you take care of your community while developing skills and all the rest of it. It really is the model we need to use, and it is the way forward. I just think it's tremendous, and you're articulate and you know, it's just fantastic.
Well, thank you so much. It's so good to talk to you. For the listeners, Mr. Nick and I go way back. We've been walking together for years now, and he is such a wealth of information. We fly in the same circles. We're over on the Mamie's crew. We used to be over on the Deanna Spingola crew, and I can always anytime Mr. Nick posts something, I always click on it because I know there's a nugget there. If he went to the trouble to post it, there's something there. So I thank you so much for, you know, all, you know, your work over the years, because you're on the front lines too, and I really appreciate you calling in tonight.
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, I think it's great of Dion to get the site up and running. And I had a question, you know. I mean, listening to you describe your activities at the Post, it's like, did you pick up all of the experiences over the years? Or are you just sort of doing what needs to be done and learning on the fly? I mean, legal work, I know your technical background, but you've got the land skills, and then all these other things. Or different people in your crew are providing different skills. I mean, I'd just like to hear you talk about that a little bit more if you guys got time.
Right. Well, real briefly, I have, like I said, a lot of scouting in, you know, background where I was really into scouting. I had like 72 merit badges. So
right.
I just had all this general knowledge. And then I've always been a person who, you know, wanted to learn things. And just, you know, my own life experiences where, you know, I've been on the receiving end of this. And so, you know, I always tell people, it's like, I can tell you what not to do. Because I tried that and it didn't work. So we're going to try it a different way with your situation. But also, my crew, I have just, you know, over the years put together this worldwide network of resource. And so when I get hit with somebody, I always tell people, it's like, well, I don't know what to do, but I know a guy, or I know a woman, you know, and I'm going to get with them and I'm going to get back to you. And so part of my role is to, you know, if I don't have the experience level needed, you know, is to hook the person up with somebody who does, and then act as a backup. And then I kind of tag along as the backup. And then I learn, so next time I can take point.
Okay.
And, you know, we always talk about the point, backup, and the gopher. So a lot of times, you know, and that's another thing about the model is we're getting away from that idea of the, you know, sergeant major always in charge and always the authority on everything that comes up. But that's ridiculous. You've got to be able to hand off leadership based on who's the most qualified for the situation. So this idea of dynamic leadership is key to the Trading Post model, where, you know, I step back all the time, and I always joke to my guys, you know, it's like, sometimes they let me hold the flashlight, you know. So, you know, they do the, you know, the technical work, and I hold the flashlight and watch, you know.
Okay.
So that's kind of where we are with the Trading Post. So
Yeah.
So one of the other things is, you know, in the model we say, see it, do it, teach it. So that's our learning model. You know, you see somebody else do it, and then you do it, preferably under a supervised situation where you have a mentor that's, you know, making sure you do it right and everything, and then you teach it. And last week I was talking about my friends that worked at BASF in Germany. And the old adage, if you ever want to understand what you don't know about a subject, try to teach it, because your students will tell you everything you don't know about the subject. And so I was sitting there at IBM trying to teach network engineering to these BASF engineers, and it was like 2 weeks of just getting grilled. I felt like I was going through my dissertation in college or something, because they just would not let me get away with anything. But at the end, they took me out to dinner. It was just really nice dinner. And you know, I was like the young, you know, newbie engineer trying to, you know, connect the dots for people. And they were just like so far beyond what I was. And, you know, it was such a great experience. But, you know, I definitely learned what I didn't know about engineering in those 2 weeks with those engineers from Germany. So,
great stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I just think at this time, you know, it's tough for so many people. And this model is a great way for people to really start to get back in motion again and to connect with people And I just find my you know, sort of 9/11 activism. I know how I felt when I started to do it, and I always feel better having done it. It gets the stress, the tension, all of this stuff seems to get out, and you get positive feedback from people. Right now, the public is ready. You get positive feedback. At least I do. Where I am.
Same here. You know, the time is right. That's why we've got to hit now, because the time is right. Well, Nick, thank you so much. Anything else? You got any other questions for me or Dion?
Nope.
I'll
think of them later. Yeah, I'm going to bug you and ask you to put together a list of those, you know, those steps. You mentioned like three things tonight where, you know, watch it, do it, teach it. There's been a couple more you've mentioned. I'd love to get those from you. But great program, and I'm going to go. Thanks a lot, guys. Good night.
Thank you so much. All right, we have Test at the phone line. Dion, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yay, I hung up the right person. Okay, this is great. It's my night after all. Okay. So what did you think of Nick's questions?
What was I going to say? There was something I was going to add, but then I forgot now.
Okay. All right. Well, like I said, Nick and I have been walking together for years now in various crews, and he definitely can connect the dots. He comes up with some good stuff. So, okay, so kind of going along with that, so question 8, who will go with you?
Hopefully everybody.
Good answer, yeah.
But I know that's not really a practical answer, but, you know, people keep throwing out this number 1, 2, 10%. I don't know where they get that number from. And I've always wondered that.
About?
Who is, how do I put this? Who has the ability to be woken up? And people put out this number, I think like 1 or 2 or 10%, I heard is the most, but, and I don't know where they get that number from.
Yeah, I don't know where they get that statistics either, because I work with people that, it took some time. I mean, like a decade of baby steps. But, you know, when you can take somebody like a retired kindergarten teacher and convince them, you know, that not only was 9/11 a farce, but the Holocaust is a farce, I get a gold star from the kindergarten teacher, because that was some work, you know, that kind of, you know, when you can take just somebody, you know, in your community and work with them and finally get them to wake up and become part of the movement and, you know, just get active. You know, that is such a great feeling of accomplishment of, you know, that you feel when that happens. And it, you know, it's hard because, you know, you have so many people that, you know, do attack you and call you names, but you also have those people that, you know, come up and say, you know, thanks for that. You know,
right.
It was hard to accept, but I see where you're coming from now, and I want to contribute. I want to be a part of this. And, yeah, that's a great feeling when that happens. So,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, they keep pulling out that number. It's like 10% at most. And I know it's way more than that just from people I interact with personally in real life. A lot of people are real receptive to what we have to say, but they're just too afraid to say it. And I think the reason why a lot of us get down about it and like, oh, there's like nobody out there, it's because of all the cultural Marxist garbage that the media pushes forth. Sometimes we think that's how the real world is, but it's really not.
And that's what we were talking about last week with it being a paper tiger. They are trying so hard to sell us a false reality, and that television set is not telling the truth, and it does not represent the real statistics. I think the real statistics are the polls in Germany that say like 90% of the German people do not believe the official version of 9/11. Something like 80% of the Americans don't believe the official story. But yet they keep trying to say that, oh, people are stupid and they're just, you know, they'll never wake up. And I think that's just a defense mechanism that, you know, they're using that as more asymmetrical warfare against us, to that sense of helplessness that we'll stop trying because we feel defeated because, you know, oh, our efforts are in vain. And I don't right. see that that's the case at all. I see that people are waking up exponentially and they're getting very, very active. So I don't believe that number either. You know, I think they're just, you know, trying to do damage control with that, in my opinion. Right.
Yeah, they keep pushing out these numbers, and we know the media lies. The majority of Americans know the media lies, so why are you going to believe what the media tells you?
Right. Yeah, that's the thing. It's, you know, once you have tagged a pathological liar, somebody that is getting paid to lie to you, why would you listen to anything they say from that moment on?
Right.
And so the viewership of the mainstream media, and, you know, Katie was talking about in the chat room that, you know, you've got, you know, six corporations, they're all Zionist controlled, that own, you know, over 90% of the media. They're all lying, but their numbers are in free fall. There are internet shows that have greater viewing numbers now than CNN's getting. And, you know, to me, that's why they're freaking out and trying to pass all these so-called hate laws to try to shut down internet sites, because, like I always say in my writing, you know, truth is anti-Semitism. You know, truth is a hate crime, according to these Jews. And we just have to get around that and say, we're not listening to you anymore. We don't believe what you're saying. You've lost your power. You have lost the benefit of the doubt at this point. And once somebody loses the benefit of the doubt, they can't lie to you anymore, because you start questioning and challenge the lie and you realize they don't hold up. And so that power they have over you is shattered.
Right. Yeah, like a lot of the major newspapers, they're losing readership. A lot of people are cutting the cable bills. Nobody watches or pays attention to the mainstream media as much as they used to anymore. You know, nobody's going to movies anymore, basically because you've got to mortgage your house to go see a movie nowadays. But but
well,
they have to keep raising the price because nobody's going.
Right, and I see that as well. Plus, people just are tired of what's being turned out from Hollywood. It's like, I don't want to see that. I don't want my children to see that. I think one of the biggest tragedies is what the Jews have done to the Disney franchise. I mean, talk about running it into the ground. The so-called ABC family programming. That's horrible stuff that they show under the guise of, you know, this is family television. It's like, no, it's not. That's slime. And people don't want their children to see that. And, you know, the same with the movie theaters here. They're losing money hand over fist. Nobody goes to the movies. One, they can't afford it, and two, they don't want to. If they've got the $20 for a ticket, they're going to do something else with it. So I agree with you.
What are you going to go do and watch another 80s remake?
Right. How many times can you retread these movies and just try to give us the same thing? And every time they do it, they run it further into the gutter. Yeah, they never try to do anything honorable and noble on the screen anymore. It's always taking something that did stand for something, that, you know, was like Greek tragedy, you know, that actually had some, you know, value to it, and they make a mockery out of it and just run it into the gutter, and people don't want to see that.
Right.
And it kills me what they do with, I'm very much into archetypes and classic stories, you know, like Sleeping Beauty and Snow White and, you know, the whole thing like Briar Rose and Beauty and the Beast, yeah, those are archetypal stories. You don't mess with those stories, just like you don't mess with Greek myths. Those Greek myths are very specific. Yeah, all those symbols mean something, and you don't change them. And when I see the Jews take a classic fairy tale that has, you know, existed for centuries and centuries and centuries in Western civilization, that, you know, those archetypes and symbols are there for a reason, or a Greek story, and those symbols are there for a reason, and they make a mockery out of it, it makes my blood boil. It's like, you know, your stories, you know, pale by comparison to these works. You have never created anything at this level. How dare you make a mockery of these and then packages as something to children? So that's just one of my, you know, pet peeves about, you know, where everything's going with that. So, okay, so real quick, we're about out of time. Question 9, what do you do in case of a meanie attack?
See, you sent me that question, and, you know, it kind of depends on the situation, I guess. You know, there's different types of situations you can think of, and it all depends on the situation.
Good answer. And that's one of the things I want people to understand about fourth generation asymmetrical warfare. They're coming at us at every layer, every level, and we've got to come up with defenses and counter offensives at all those strata. You know, war is not fought like two football teams on a scrimmage line anymore. That is not how you do warfare. We're dealing with a asymmetrical, you know, fourth generation warfare model, and so we have to learn, you know, and identify how they're attacking us and come up with, you know, these defenses at all these different strata. So that, I think that's a great answer. You know, I always say the answer is it depends. You know, so
right.
That's always my answer to that question. It depends. What kind of attack are the meanies doing?
Right, it's so, situational.
Situational, exactly. And depending, as we go more into the Pepper Plan Trading Post model, you know, I identify these, I call them holds. It's like when you're under attack, it's different level of holds. Are they just trying to intimidate you? Are they trying to rob you? Are they trying to rape you and torture you? Are they trying to kill you and take your stuff? You know, so you have these different strata of how intense of an attack it is. And,
right.
You know, our defenses and counteroffenses are going to have to, you know, take into account those different levels. You know, are we battling a fifth column NGO in our community trying to stop a Christmas play or whatever? Or are we dealing with somebody, you know, coming through with a rape gang to, you know, rape our women and our children? You know, what
right.
It's like, that is the strata we're dealing with and the realities we're dealing with.
And I would hope your actions aren't the same for those two situations.
Right, and that's the thing. You know, we have different, you know, means that, you know, you can't, situation, you know, you don't have a, take a hammer to it. You know, you've got different tools in your toolbox instead of just a hammer. So, when you're, you know, that old saying, if your only tool is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail. You know, we've got lots of tools in our toolbox. So we're going to be looking at these different strata of problems and coming up with solutions for them so that we can help our brothers and sisters at all these different levels. And, you know, the reality is some of them are tragic. And like I said, when you go down into what's going on in parts of Europe right now and South Africa, it just breaks your heart of what these people are being put through. And that's, yeah, the different layers we're going to be working with. So any other things you want to throw in there before we call it a night?
I think that about does it.
Okay.
But I'd like to thank you for having me on tonight. This was fun.
Oh, thank you so much for coming on. I thought it was a wonderful show. I apologize again for the technical problems at the beginning. Again, I thank Microsoft for the automatic updates that I didn't ask for. Make a target class. And
right.
See if there's any last questions in the chat room. Anybody? Dick said, if I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning, hammer in the evening. Okay. I don't think anybody's got any other questions. So thanks again to Mr. Beyond Werewolf for joining us tonight. Thanks the crew for showing up. Thanks Radio Werewolf for having me. And until next time, hope everyone has a great week, and I will see you at the rendezvous. Good night, all.